This is Danny Zhulkin, and you're listening to the Level Flight Podcast.
Maroon Center, no! Connor Hellebuck! Golden opportunity, Kyle Connor shoots, and he scores! Kyle Connor! Triple overtime series winner! Can you believe it?
Quickly on to Morrissey, scores! Josh Morrissey in overtime! And the Jets win it 5-4.
Hello and welcome everyone to episode 86 of the Level Flight Podcast. Our first regular episode happening, you know, during playoff action. I'm joined by Elliot today. Connor, unfortunately, is wrapped up a bit today. So just the two of us. I know Connor definitely has some thoughts on what happened last night in the game. We talked a lot about sort of what our expectations were on LFP Live on Sunday. Which before we get into any of that, Elliot, how are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm back in my normal setup, so I feel a little bit more comfortable. And yeah, I can't say enough about that game. And obviously, I know you're going to talk about Sunday because obviously you prefaced that. But before Brian says anything else, that was unbelievable just to be a part of. I know I wasn't there, but just in the chat and participating was just awesome.
Yeah, exactly. What Elliot's referencing there is our record-breaking LFP Live that we held on Sunday as our playoff preview show. We ended up going near 2 hours live, which was just incredible because the entire time that we were live, the chat was just bumping. It was fantastic. We managed to coordinate it too, where we got Murat Ateş from The Athletic on. Friend of the show on regularly at this point. He had joined us from the rink. You had some hockey ASMR in the background, the ping of the post, the slap shots, that sort of thing. And between all platforms, so it counts up on Facebook, YouTube, and the three Twitters that we broadcast on. We had at one point over 650 concurrent viewers, which spectacular, just incredible. And it has done so well after the fact too. And we talked a lot about in the episode what our expectations were. I think I said 4-2. That was my score prediction. I was way off. And of course we are talking about the game that took years off of our lives last night.
Oh,
in which the Jets took a 1-0 series lead by winning 7-6 over the Colorado Avalanche. I've got thoughts. I need to somehow figure out how to put them into order because there was so much that happened. But I'll start with you, Elliot. I know that obviously there's a lot to take out of that one, but what stands out to you, sort of like the good, the bad, and just where do they go from here?
Well, we're going to start with how the game started, the ugly. The Jets, obviously, as you would expect, Connor actually mentioned it a couple times. If you, I know I hate, well, I don't hate it, but just his post-game show on WST, his reaction post-game with Michael Remus, I think his thoughts actually kind of mirror what I was saying in our chat during the game, was the Jets look quite, they look flat-footed, they look timid, they look not ready to play, and obviously it's understandably so. Like, you knew going, like, I think it's a little intimidating when, like, half the building is filled when you go out for a warm-up and it's charged. Like, I get it. I've played in front of bigger than normal crowds. You're not really, you come out of the dressing room, you're not expecting it. You get a little bit of extra jolt, right? So the Jets were playing timid because they were trying not to have their energy cause any mistakes. I mean, it didn't matter. It still happened. But starting with the ugly, not a good way to start the game, being timid. And Brian, you said this on the show on Sunday. I don't really want to start with Neil Pionk. But, we're going to have to start with Neil Pionk. He made a bunch of passes. This one was one of them. He tried to cross ice pass this one. It got intercepted. And Valeri Nichushkin, that was an unreal shot. I hate to give it to an Avs player, but that was a perfectly placed shot to beat Connor Hellebuck. So not a good start. But yeah, just to kind of keep on the theme of the bad passes, the Jets needed to clean up early, and obviously we'll get into more of it. But just initial thoughts from that first bit of the first period, or a good chunk of that first period, where both teams, but especially I think more so the Jets, were trying way too many things that have cost them more in games where they haven't gotten offense, or converted on much offense. But it was just, it was really sloppy in terms of breakouts, and just trying to make the right read just wasn't there. But yeah, just initial thoughts from that first period were just, I was quite nerve wracking. I didn't think that game was going to end up how it did.
Yeah. And I mean, you alluded to it where it felt like they really got away from what's made them successful, especially late in the year, where they play fast, they play crisp, a lot of, you know, passes in transition, a lot of carrying the puck in. It felt like early, they were intentionally dumping the puck in just so they could go for a hit. It's not them. Like, that's the thing. Like, the whole thing about hitting is if you out hit the other team, it means you don't have the puck as much as them.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing. And obviously a big hit in a playoff atmosphere, it does a lot for momentum and it can really jazz the guys up. But if that's really all you're doing, it doesn't really benefit you aside from maybe, you know, imposing your will a little bit. Maybe you rough some guys up, but
100%.
What made them successful in the regular season is just playing smart, you know, taking a page out of Rick Bonus's book here, great puck management. And they had horrible puck management to start there. And, you know, like, obviously you mentioned the Pionk thing, the Dylan Sandberg play from behind the net that gave the puck away to Joel Kiviranta, which eventually ended up with a Miles Wood goal. It was very much a sloppy start for the Jets, and it cost them at the beginning. And it was, I mean, at one point the shots were, I think, you know, 10-2, and on home ice in front of that crowd coming out that flat was really concerning. And that's where it was just that much better when, you know, they struck back quickly with two, obviously Morrissey gets the first, and then capitalizing on a similar mistake from an Avs player, which winds up directly on Vlad Nemestikov's stick and he just wires it. So taking advantage of those mistakes, it goes both ways, right? So I would be more concerned with the start if the Jets didn't respond in the exact same way that the Avs did to their mistakes. So as long as they can kind of go stride for stride, it's better, but you have to clean it up. And I know Brendan Dillon said it really well in the post game, where he said, it's, you know, good to see that we've got that offensive game still underneath us, but that's not us. Like, it's giving up those grade A chances, you know, really just allowing the Avs to have their way. And I think we can't really get around this game without talking about the goaltending. And especially on the Avalanche side of things, where Alexander Georgiev, we spoke about this at length, essentially from the point when it looked as if the Jets and the Avs were going to play, we started mentioning the goaltending battle. And Alex Georgiev looked so shaky in net, as he has for the last while. Elliot, I want to know your thoughts on sort of do you think the Avs start him next game, and like, how long is his leash? Because it looked as if any shot that came in on him, he wasn't comfortable with.
Here's the funny thing. The score line reads 7-6. You would assume that the Jets didn't get a save out of Connor Hellebuyck last night, or if you're listening to this on Tuesday, Sunday night. That complete opposite. Like, Connor Hellebuyck at times kept them in the game, right? The Jets would make a mistake and Connor Hellebuyck would have to bail them out. Like, it actually, other than the six goals, was a typical like 2021 Winnipeg Jets game where the Jets would get forced into a mistake and Connor Hellebuyck would bail them out without getting another goal put on the board.
Well, and I'd argue too that, like, aside from the McKinnon goal, I wouldn't really fault him on any of the 100%. Other ones with sight lines and everything. And even then, the McKinnon one, and I can't remember who posted this. McKinnon does this weird little thing where he has a hitch in his shot that opens goalies up regardless of where he is. Mm-hmm. So it looked like they seem to react a little quicker to his first move, and then it opens them up, and that's how he, you know, you can feed it through the five hole there. But really, that's the only one that I would expect more out of Hellebuck on, but the other ones, he can't see. It's going off of people's, you know, it's deflected. It's off of someone's shoulder in front of the net. Like, it's weird things. So I wouldn't read much into the fact that he gave up
100%.
Six, because he did everything that he normally does. It's not like you saw him and he looked uncomfortable. So if he plays like that, as long as you can kind of clear out the area in front of them, I'm not concerned with what Hellebuck's going to do the rest of the series.
Because no, it's 100%. Nine times out of 10, he has a better, like, there's a better result there. But in terms of Georgiev, so Jared Bednar, the head coach of the Colorado Avalanche, did come out today on Monday afternoon after practice saying that the Avs are going to start Georgiev again because Anunin is still sick. They actually did make a roster move as well. About 3-4, I believe it was 3 o'clock. They did call up Ivan Provetsov, who is a former goalie for the Arizona Coyotes, and they did send down Arvid Holm back to the Eagles. Is it the Colorado Eagles? Is there? Yeah. Okay. Their AHL affiliate, which I'm not surprised that everyone was calling for Georgiev to get pulled. Well, if I'm Bednar, I wouldn't want Arvid Holm in the net. That's worse than Georgiev. Like, as much as Arvid Holm's a former Jets draft pick, I don't want him in net. He's an AHL goaltender for a reason. But I think if you're an Avs fan or anybody else in that Avs roster, I think you're a little worried because that is now twice in the past 2 weeks that the Jets have put up a touchdown on any goaltender that the Avs have thrown out there, whether that be, I believe, Anunin came in relief in the other game. Yeah, Georgiev was in there to begin with, and then
it was after the first period where he gave up, you know, four on however many shots they had.
Mm-hmm. Well, even last night, like, the Jets didn't have, they had half as many shots as the Avs, and they still won the game, right? So I don't see, like, unless, so let's say Georgiev, we'll see, he's starting on Tuesday night, no matter what. If they lose again, or even Georgiev gives up another 5-6, I would assume that they're going to try to get Anunin back from sickness as quickly as possible to at least give themselves another option, because especially if they lose and the Jets put up another, like I said, 5-6, and if they lose, like, Colorado's reeling going back home down 2-0. So I think that, and like we've talked about so much, their biggest weakness is depth, which it's hard to say after last night because their depth did do a good chunk of the work. But goaltending is their biggest issue. So for the Avs to stay in this series, as crazy as this sounds, for the Avs to stay in this series, they need Georgiev to make a save because he didn't make a single
save.
They couldn't get one out of him last night. Like, every time the Jets had a golden opportunity, they scored. Like, they made the most of their opportunities, and Georgiev just couldn't. Like, that was the difference. Connor Hellebuck, yes, he let in six, but he made a bunch of saves to not allow that goal from who scored the last one? Was that whoever scored the sixth goal, we'll just go with that. Could have been the seventh and the game tire, right? Like, Connor Hellebuck made enough saves to win the Jets the game. Georgiev did absolutely nothing to help the Avs win that hockey game. Absolutely nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, we haven't even got to, you know, a lot of what sort of went right for the Jets, because obviously they put up a seventh spot and it takes a lot.
Playoff game.
And exactly. Yeah. And there's, you know, plenty to talk about in terms of the offensive side of things. But first, before we actually get to that, I do want to, you know, take a moment here and hear from our sponsor, DraftKings, as always. So we're going to hear from them, and we will be right back with some talk about the offensive game from the Jets and what to expect going into game two. Well, tonight when you're hearing this. So we'll be right back.
The chase for the Stanley Cup is on, and if you're looking to light the lamp, nothing beats DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. From the start of playoff beards all the way till hoisting the cup, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code THPN. New customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code THPN only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, licensee partner Golden Nugget Lake Charles, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/hockey for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. Copyright NHL 2024, all rights reserved. And welcome back into episode 86 of the Level Flight Podcast, playoff edition. We're talking all about that chaotic game one that saw the Jets win 7-6 in a back and forth affair. That sure, it took years off of my life. But we mentioned before the break that we wanted to talk a little bit about the offensive game, because obviously they put up seven. That's not insignificant at all. 100%. I want to give some flowers here, because we've been very, very critical of this line for a long time. In terms of chances, you know, for and against last night, the Connor Scheifele-Vilardi line was very good. You know, a couple of goals from Kyle Connor, a goal from Mark Scheifele. Obviously, one of those from Connor was a power play goal, but that line did still produce two goals. You know, they controlled the expected goals battle. They weren't, you know, too far off from breaking even in the shot battle. But then again, who did? Because, you know, the Avs outshot the Jets viciously. And then obviously we got some production from that third line, which was stapled to Nate MacKinnon, where Adam Lowry had, you know, a couple of goals and big goals too, and one that no one really knew went in until they showed the replay. From the forward core, Elliot, what kind of actually like stood out to you in terms of, you know, either things that were surprising, you know, maybe guys that maybe didn't show up as much that you thought they would, or, you know, just like the overall sort of view on that offensive game that saw them drop a touchdown and the extra point?
Realistically, like, it's hard to say, did anybody play bad? Because I went, obviously, you know, you go on Twitter and it's a terrible place to be, but, you know, we live there anyways. And all people had to say were bad things about the second line. I don't think the second line were bad last night. Like, realistically, well, it looks analytically they were bad, but people were trying to say they weren't doing anything. They didn't generate anything, but like did they not play as well as they should have, especially in the defensive end? No, they got hemmed in a couple times. They didn't really clear the puck when they needed to, that sort of thing. I go on and on about some of the other deficiencies they had defensively. On the offensive side of the puck, which is where people were trying to complain that they weren't doing anything, there were multiple opportunities where that line could have completely changed what their analytics looked like if they had just put one in the back of the net. I will say that if Georgiev did have to make a save, he did make one or two on that line, but it seemed to be that line only. So other than that, like, other than them not getting on the score sheet, it's hard to knock anybody else. Like, that first line, Rick Bowness is going to just smirk and say, "I told you so," for the rest of the postseason if this line keeps playing well. And we know they could play well because we saw them.
If they can just do that, I will have nothing bad to say. Like, there's no. I think we had Garrett Hole on the podcast on episode 84, and he mentioned kind of like the 50th percentile, where you want you sort of to be above for a top line, is you're looking at about 52% expected goals. You know, you're controlling the shot battle. So if they get in and around that 50th percentile and the rest of the lineup can just kind of do their own thing, you're looking pretty good. It's just staying there. And like they did it last night, and we saw that they did really well against that Avs second unit with now Zach Parise moved up. So then it was, you know, Nichushkin, Mittelstadt, and then they did have a couple of rotating guys in and around there, which was interesting because, you know, they kind of seemed a little bit off. But I kind of want to circle back on what you said about the second line, where I'm not going to say that they were bad, but I wanted more out of Monahan and Toffoli, because it felt like Ehlers was generating a ton of chances that, like, I, and I will say this, there was the play where he walked into the slot and he tried feed Pionk out of the net, and Pionk fanned on it. But I honestly, like, obviously you want Pionk to,
he should have shot the puck.
Exactly. That puck should have been shot. Georgiev at that point had already let in a few goals on some, you know, iffy chances. Ehlers has to shoot that puck. Obviously, yeah, we want Pionk to connect on that, and, you know, we can do the whole what if thing, but it's a bigger guarantee shooting from directly in Georgiev's kitchen than it is, you know, trying to pass it over to a guy who's covered. There was another play too where Ehlers fed Monahan, and Monahan's stick wasn't fully on the ice yet, and he fanned on it. So they were close. That's the thing, because it's, you're not going to get, you know, the shot attempts. You're not going to get the chances generated if you're not able to get, you know, your stick on the puck. And I thought that Ehlers was fantastic last night. I thought he was doing incredible things, because especially early on, where no one seemed to want to gain the zone, you know, with a controlled entry or anything, he was the only one really doing that. And once the rest of the team started sort of smartening up a little bit there, it felt like they were following his lead a little bit, but he was generating a lot. The Avs didn't seem to know what to do with his speed and his little lateral movements, because he has those little tiny little side-to-side movements that just make guys look silly. I honestly think that if Monahan and Toffoli just have a little bit more, you know, finish last night, that could have been double-digit goals.
Oh, 100%. 100%. That line probably pushes the Jets over the top, and it's not even close. But, yeah, like, realistically, that first line we saw earlier in the year can play well, right? Then this past, I guess, couple weeks down the stretch here, they've shown that they can find that form again after not being good for most of the year. If you have a first line that is in and around that 50 percentile and winning their minutes for the most part, and then that second line is really like taking it to the Avs, like, look out. I don't understand everybody trying to say that, oh, the Avs, they're like, you know, they've got MacKinnon and Makar and Branton. Okay, that's great. But if the Jets have three full lines, and I mean, it's hard to not say the fourth line wasn't rolling, because I thought they played well as well, like separate from Nemestikov's goal. But like, if the Jets have three lines rolling consistently, like let's say the third line has to worry about MacKinnon, and so they're not really generating as much offense as they did in game one for the rest of the series. If 1, 2, and 4 are rolling, like, good night, like, see you later. Like, I think we are going to be just fine. Just fine. Obviously defensive structure needs to get fixed, but in terms of the offensive game, if they can kind of get away from that early game plan that they had, the whole dumping and chasing, and I don't understand. I get the whole big hits thing, but then you saw a big hit led to an odd man rush the other way. So if they just stick to the game plan. Oh, 100%. 100%. But I think the game plan that they need to stick to was from that second period, when it was lower event. The Avs didn't really generate too much in that last 10 minutes. More so, I guess, the last 10 minutes of that second period and the first good chunk of the third period. Avs didn't really generate much. They scored, which is a plus, but they were dominating the play. They were cycling the puck. Like, they need to get back to the whole cycle game. They're not a dump and chase. Their whole team is not a dump and chase, retrieve the puck kind of team. The bottom six for somewhat is, more so the fourth line. Even the third line, I think this year, has been better when they've tried to carry the puck or make a couple passes and carry the puck over the blue line. They can dump it in every once in a while if they need to, but that's as much as that's supposed to be their game. It's really not. So if the Jets just stick to that second period game plan, I think they'll be just fine, especially on offense. Like, they'll just roll.
And just to kind of put a bow on things here, because I know, I don't think, like, as fun as the outsider view of it was, I don't think any Jets fan wants what happened in game one to happen again.
It could completely flip the other way.
100%. Like, that's the thing. Like, you get like literally two saves from Georgiev, and suddenly it's a loss in game one, and you're, you know, trying to avoid going down 2-0 heading on the road. But I'm curious, sort of, like, you kind of mentioned it a bit there, but what is one thing you're looking for in game two that would sort of help the Jets be, you know, successful?
I think it's mainly the turnovers, like a player like Dylan Sandberg or Neil Pion do not need to, they don't have the IQ or the, like, realistically, it doesn't matter who it really is making the pass. Whoever that is needs to not make a forced pass. A smarter, just make smart plays, and I think the Jets play just fine. Like, smart, crisp, short passes. Don't try for the home run ball. Like, you know, it's okay to play small ball sometimes.
High percentage play.
Yeah, just it's okay to go D to D a couple times. Look, now go up the blue line. Fine, tip it in if you need to, or whatever. Make a couple passes. Find an open teammate. Like, there was a play there. I can't remember when it was, but I think it was when I believe it was Sandberg and Stanley. They went D to D a couple times, and then actually Stanley, I'm pretty sure, saw Ehlers curling through the middle, and he just hit Ehlers in stride, and Ehlers came over the blue line, and that was that. That was your breakout. Like, it doesn't need to be that
play. Like,
it, you don't need to make it so difficult. Like, it doesn't need to be the low percentage play all the time. Like, you're not trying to make the home run ball here. Like, the Jets just need to stick to their defensive structure, just play smart, don't force anything, and as we saw, the offense will come. I think one key, we didn't really talk about it just quickly, is you cannot give up any penalties. Oh, absolutely, yeah. None. Like, that's all I'm gonna say, because I don't, this could be a whole another 20 minutes, but the abs went 2 for 2 and they made it look so easy. Like, the Jets literally need to stay out of the penalty box. No silly penalties, no also after the play penalties that aren't needed. Like, the abs are going to come out tomorrow or tonight charged. They're going to want to force you to make some mistakes again, but also they're going to realize, hey, we can really do something here and generate a lot on the power play and stay in games. Especially if the Jets are going to shut us down 5-on-5, we need to force them into some mistakes, and they're probably going to get a little chippy, and the Jets need to just refrain from, they said a lot on the broadcast actually last night, the Jets just need to stay out of the box. Elliot Friedman said of the bunch, they need to not engage. They just let it go. You don't let Vegas, or sorry, see, I said Vegas, because we've had this issue before. They need to let the Avs just kind of, if they're going to do anything, let them do it, because they might even force themselves into the box, right? So
yeah.
I think just cleaning up turnovers and staying out of the box is just the biggest thing.
Yeah, and I'll briefly touch on it too, where with how passive the Jets penalty kill is, you can't afford to let the incredible dynamic offensive games of both McCarr and McKinnon just wander around in the offensive zone, because they're so smart with the puck that they will just wait for you to just like take a bad step, and then suddenly they're past you. Yeah. And for me, it's we've seen it before, where if you are just kind of standing there, you're going to get scored on. You have to be aggressive, because obviously that might open up a lane for them, but it could also force them to make an unforced error. So
yeah,
that's a huge issue for me. I think the biggest sort of key to, let's say, improving on the first game is just clearing out in front of Connor Hellebuck.
Yeah.
We saw a few times where, whether it went in or not, obviously there were goals where he didn't see it at all, clearly. You need to make sure that he can make the saves. So they did it fairly well, especially early in the season, where they clear out the shot lanes so he's just one-on-one with the shooter. And if he's one-on-one with the shooter, unless it's a perfect shot like Nichushkin's, he's going to make the save. He's the best goalie in the world. He's going to win the Vezina. He's won the Jennings. You have to trust in your goalie to make the easy saves. And by opening the lanes for the Avs to just shoot the puck, obviously that seems counterintuitive, but he can see it. If he can see it, he's probably going to save it. And I feel like they need to, like, there's a line here, because I can easily see like a Logan Stanley or a Brendan Dillon taking it too far and absolutely leveling a dude in front of the net, just trying to clear him out of the way. But just get decent body position and allow a lane or two just so Hellebuck can see that puck coming, because if he can see it, he's probably going to stop it.
100%. 100%.
Yeah. And I mean, it's one of the many things I'm watching for going into, I guess, tonight's game. I'm looking for less goals, and I mean, granted, less goals by Colorado. If you can score 7 again, go right on ahead. It seems unlikely, but with Georgiev and net, who knows?
We've now done that twice, so I...
Exactly, and we scored six earlier in the season too, so it's not exactly an unheard of thing, so I think if they can take advantage of it, go nuts, but I think they want to keep it... You might see a bit more of a low-event game. Like with, as I mentioned it earlier, Brendan Dillon talking about how that game is not them. That's totally out of their comfort zone. So they want it, but they want to win it their way. So you might see some adjustments going into game two just to try and limit what we saw in the offensive games there. But I'm looking forward to it. We're going to be back on Thursday morning talking about what goes down on Tuesday night. And then we'll be back again with another pregame edition of LFP Live next Sunday. I think it's a 1:30 start in Colorado. So it
might get Connor in the press box for LFP Live, depending.
Colorado.
Oh, right. Yeah, this is in Colorado. Yeah, this is game four. Never mind. Yeah, sorry.
So it'll be another fun one. Not exactly sure what we're planning yet, but I mean, we saw this last week, everyone was super engaged. So, you know, mark that down as, you know, a day to make sure you get up at a decent hour and check us out at 9 a.m. But, you know, next up is Thursday, and we'll probably have a lot to talk about going, you know, on the road. Maybe the Jets have a 2-0 lead going into Colorado to try and, you know, really put a stranglehold. Maybe it's split. We don't know, but there's a lot to break down from that game that I just kind of want to forget it and move forward because
it's how the playoffs too much work. Chaos.
Exactly. As I said, we will see you on Thursday morning. So for myself and from Elliot, thank you for listening to episode 86 of the Level Flight Podcast. We will see you later this week. Enjoy game two, everyone. See ya.
Peace.
You're listening to the Level Flight Podcast on the Hockey Podcast Network.